Dear Mom, I know you've tried to protect me from who I am, and you've said my life before you adopted me doesn't matter, but it does matter. It matters because I still have visions of the place where I was born. I've heard all the whispers. I know what happened in that town where I was born. And I know you've tried to protect me from its horror for 19 years. Well, today I'm going back to that little abandoned town called Gatlin. Home to the truth. Love, Hannah.
Welcome to Percolated Media's Children of the Corn series, part of the 3-Minute Retrospectives look at the film adaptations of author Stephen King.
Give yourself. It's his will.
Join Garrett.
Don't underestimate the power of my vision.
Matt.
He speaks to me always, but today he is displeased.
And Adam.
Is this how they come to a complete stop in California?
As they find out who of the three of them really agrees with he who walks behind the rose.
He who walks behind the rose will decide your fate.
Will the three podcasters survive this trek through rows and rows of corn?
I got your eternal flame right here!
Find out next, courtesy of Percolated Media.
Come on, let's go!
Children of the Corn 3, Urban Harvest, was released September 12, 1995, and this is directed by James D. R. Hickox.
If that last name sounds familiar, it's because this guy's brother, Anthony Hickox, directed Hellraiser 3, and he brought his brother's crew to this series, to this movie, to film. And if, boys, if you can say anything about Children of the Corn Part 3, it definitely has a Hellraiser vibe, doesn't it?
Oh, God, there's one scene in particular they just, I'm convinced they tore that page out of the Hellraiser 3 script and just slapped it into this one.
Yes.
First of all, can we talk about how ridiculous this title is, this subtitle is? Urban Harvest, which makes sense because the movie gets out of rural America and goes into the scary streets of Chicago. Much like the second movie, though, they're up front putting their cards on the table saying, we're throwing the pretense out with the bathwater.
Meaning?
I don't think there's any attempt to be very serious like that first movie is.
No, but some would say that was a good direction to take.
No, absolutely, because I like the second one a hell of a lot more than the first one.
Yeah. Adam, as somebody who, you are a renowned fan of the Hellraiser franchise, did you get the Hellraiser feel for this one?
I did, and I'm a pretty big fan of the Hellraiser franchise. I can make excuses for three, sometimes even more than two, but yeah, this definitely has some three vibes to it. That may or may not be a pleasant thing. Yes, as much as I like Hellraiser, if you would have put Hellraiser Urban Harvest, which I guess you could actually do with that franchise as well, I don't know how I would have felt about it. So this, to me, this feels like Leprechaun from Da Hood. It's just such a title that when you look at it, you're like, man, like urban has such a connotation when you throw it into a movie, especially in the 90s. Oh, it's hard not to feel just a little uncomfortable with it.
Now, even though Hickox brought a lot of Hellraiser's crew people with him, there was one particular crew member of this that I was actually, I'm not going to say excited about seeing, but his effects are so different that I was really anxious to see how he would handle the effects in this. Now, Matt, do you remember a guy we covered by the name of Screaming Mad George?
Did he used to work for Vince McMahon with that name?
Screaming Mad George was a guy who, he worked on Nightmare 4. He did the bug effects of,
okay,
of Brooke Thies in that. He also worked on Society. He's done a lot of Brian Usna stuff. His effects are so out there that I was anxious to see how he would handle this on a $3 million budget to see what he would do. And there's a particular actress that is famous today that got her start in this movie, which we will bring up when we get to that particular scene. So those are a couple things I was kind of looking forward to as I was getting ready to start this film. But Matt, you said that you liked Children of the Corn Part 2. Were you kind of anxious to get into Children of the Corn 3? Did that vibe give you hope that this could actually be an enjoyable romp of schlock?
Anxious is a bit of a stretch. Optimism, I would say there was a kernel of optimism, to use the the corn puns that are befitting of the tone of the previous movie. If the first movie was me being run over by a car, a la Stephen King himself, the second one was the doctor moving my bone back into place in my leg, where I'm still in pain, I'm in physical therapy, maybe this is him putting my shoulder back into its socket.
Jesus, what a metaphor.
Yeah, because I fucking hate that first movie.
I know. Now, Adam, we're three movies into an 11-part series. Were you at least a little anxious to see what this new one was going to have to bring us? I mean, it does have a title, Urban Harvest.
No. Okay. No.
All right.
Sorry. Not to us. No. I realized that I got, after this, 8 more to go, and I was really not feeling the last movie as much as I kind of, the first one I didn't think was bad, but I was like, man, we dropped off the face of the earth after one film. I was really worried going into this one. So, yep.
All right. So we open up with that Scream Associated Dimension logo and some Scythe infused credits, which put me in mind of Matt. Remember when we covered Friday the 13th Part 6 those years ago, and we had those opening credits that were kind of in James Bond style? I kind of felt that with these.
Wow, what a way to bring James Bond into this. they're definitely something. I'll give it that. I mean, there's more creativity in these frickin' prologues than there was in the first movie combined.
Yes. We see a shot of a cornfield as well as a trailer as a man is walking out with a scythe screaming the name Joshua. He says he's going to get him as he plows through the field, and Eli shows up to say he's going to prevent Josh from getting beaten. As Eli finds Josh's dad, he tells him that family is sacred. He grabs a book, which is actually a hardcover edition of Night Shift, by the way, boys, just with a different cover. As vines grab the man and literally rip him apart before stringing him up, sewing his eyes and lips together. Was this the Hellraiser clip you were thinking of, Matt?
No, it happens much later.
Oh, okay. I know the one you're talking about then.
This is when I'm only a few minutes into this film, and I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe I'm watching a Hellraiser of the corn film. That is what I'm feeling like right here. I mean, but I'm like, okay, abusive father figure, check. The corn's back alive, check. But then, and it, you know what? At least setting a tone early is important for any kind of film. That's why certain sequels I like better than originals. I know 5 minutes in, suddenly this is going to be some schlocky, cheesy horror, even more so maybe than the last two. But I got to say, it suddenly got my attention, and it got a chuckle out of me in kind of a good way that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, they're doing the Stephen King checkboxes very early between the abusive father and he's an alcoholic. So that's a two-for-one right there.
Eli says that they just need to stay together as the book gets taken underground.
which I think is what some of his publishers want to do to some of those books when they saw the length.
We cut to an adoption agency in Chicago as we're hearing that these kids aren't used to being in a city. And after two films, neither are we.
Yeah, this is quite the jump in locale. I guess they finally got permits to shoot in somewhere outside of rural Nebraska.
Yes.
And probably Vancouver. But I'm also, like, we suddenly have no kids left. It's just these two, and they're going to be adopted?
Yeah, and apparently Gatlin has become Springwood at the opening of Freddy's Dead, where all of the kids are just dead.
The two kids arrive by bus as William and Amanda Porter show up to adopt them. Matt, am I the only one getting Child's Play 2 vibes here?
Not just that. I was thinking of, like, there's a little bit of, like, the Omen, where, you know, yes, they're not the, like, bad seed, like those children from hell type of movies.
Yeah.
It's not by blood, so that's the excuse. But Child's Play 2 is a good one. I mean, look, this movie is almost as hokey as that is. In some ways, it's less believable than a talking doll possessed by a serial killer.
I was going to say, more or less believable than a talking possessed doll. The boys are seeing the colorful streets of Chicago as they pull up to the house, which isn't too dissimilar to a house my uncle in Chicago used to have. Like, I got vibes of that when I saw this. They're exploring the house as the parents are just giddy about having these kids in the house. But they then pick up and break an expensive glass model, which, again, Child's Play 2.
I barely remember Child's Play 2, so that's a very loose, very tight reference.
Well, there's a scene in the beginning of Child's Play 2 when they adopt Andy and they bring him in the house. He's walking around the front room and he bumps a statue and she's like, don't you touch things around this house. That's rule number one. And then later on in the film, Chucky breaks it. And of course, he's the one who gets in trouble for it. Maybe we'll cover that again someday since those files are lost forever.
I mean, since Adam will let this fucking foster care set up, they might as well be agnostics with Stephen King's thoughts on organized religion. Because I was thinking of Adam, that South Park episode where Cartman gets adopted. Kenny. And they can only drink agnostic beverages in the house of Dr. Pepper and Diet Dr. Pepper because they are neither cola nor a root beer.
The kids sit down to eat some Japanese invented pizza as they say grace, which includes giving thanks to He Who Walks Behind the Rose. So here's our first mention of He Who Walks Behind the Rose.
Take a drink.
Yeah. They walk the backyard and Eli is mad that there's no corn to be seen, and we hear that William sells corn. I guess he's trying to be Corned and Gecko.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my.
And you made fun of my dad jokes on the Alien Romulus review. Wow, you suck.
I think it's time we have a very strenuous meeting here, folks.
That one.
Also, okay, I gotta ask this question. Are these two actually biological brothers, or was one adopted? Because they don't look the least bit related.
They're adopted. I think Eli was adopted in Josh's house, in that trailer that was in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Oh, I'm that's pretty right. Sure he was adopted. Yeah, they do say, because the social worker brings it up later on.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. But yeah, I also love how right away, nobody is asking questions about this kid mentioning a potentially satanic or demonic entity over pizza. I mean, granted, you do have to do some exorcisms if you have the wrong slice of Domino's pizza in your bathroom. But outside of that, Satan worshiping has no place at the dinner table.
But then again, this is what you get for eating Chicago-style deep dish.
Oh, boy. Shots fired. Holy shit.
I mean, that pizza tasted really great when we were hammered beyond belief.
That's true.
And I remember watching some of the shots in this movie. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I stumbled out of that bar or tripped on that curb because I was so drunk.
Josh meets his new neighbors as William asks him to come home. Amanda opens a suitcase full of cockroaches, but of course when William opens it, it's just corn. And Eli says he thought he'd bring a taste of home back over here. So we're setting up an interesting dynamic here, boys. Amanda's taking a liking to Josh, and William's taking a liking to Eli. So we're having the parents pair off here.
Yeah, and you know, the movie opens literally with the Book of Eli being the big MacGuffin of this movie. But I guess adoptive services go all the way up to 25, because Josh looks like he should be should be riding the bench for the Michael Jordan Bulls around this time period. And Eli looks like the lost sibling of Daryl Sabara.
We cut to a nice little makeout session as Amanda says that they're not alone anymore, which makes her uncomfortable. They walk out of their room and spot the kids sleeping in the same bed. Oh, boy.
I mean, if they go further south, I'm pretty sure that's common.
Yeah, that's true.
This kid, by the way, got his start in, don't ask me why I've seen this movie, Demonic Toys.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yes.
Which,
don't worry, Adam.
If we do a full moon entertainment retrospective, I've slit my wrists right now. I'll take that.
Josh tells Eli that he screwed everything up already, as Eli says, at least they have each other. We see Eli walk back outside and head into some sort of yard in the building next door and does a ceremony to He Who Walks Behind the Rose as William and Amanda have sex, and Amanda gets something caught in her throat and falls into a crack in the earth before waking up.
I'm yes, that's the sentence first time I just said. Something stuck in her throat during sex.
But this is so weird. There's like this whole thing of corn just right outside this yard. It's just set up so weird.
Well, yeah.
Plants it.
He literally. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure this is the abandoned factory where they burned Freddy Krueger alive. That they live live next door to. That's got like godlike soil, or the corn is possessed. I mean. Don't try to think about the logic for this movie, because goddamn, your head will explode like scanners.
Well, that's what we're here for.
I gotta say, this kid is an amazing farmer, because I live in a very agricultural region, and White corn is massive this time of year right now. It's amazing that as we're recording these, I'm driving to work every day and seeing cornrows grow. Jesus criminy, that's not what I needed to remind me of these films. But the soil that this kid has, no water, no feed, no for, and he's got amazing stalks of corn really fast. Bravo, great farmer.
What I love about it, too, is as soon as he opens the suitcase and he sees these, like, William just grabs one and starts eating it right away. Like, dude, you're supposed to clean that shit. Like, I remember growing up seeing my dad clean the corn. I'm like, Dad, why are you cleaning that corn before we eat it? He's like, dude, you got to wash all of the germs off before you put it in. This guy is just going to town on it before we're even washing it.
And again, that just reiterates how shitty Chicago pizza is, that he'd rather eat corn that's been in a suitcase for God knows how long, and who knows what pesticides are on it.
Yeah. We cut to William begging for a promotion as he says, now I have two more mouths to feed. We see William try to get Josh to wear some new clothes as Amanda is hearing whispers of, give us your blood. Eli says that modest dress is the key to a pious life.
I don't think that correlates to dressing like Paul Bear.
Yeah. We cut to the boys in school meeting the principal as Eli gives him the hairy eyeball. And no, that's not just a horror. Like, that's a metaphor of saying, yeah, he's giving him the side eye.
So they also go to, look, these movies are starting to blend together, so I got to ask clarifying questions, speaking of the courtroom. They're going to, like, a Catholic high school, aren't they?
See, that's just, yes, it. I could not get a read on exactly what kind of high school they were going to as I was taking my notes.
If that's the case, then they must have all grade levels, like middle school through high school, and there's no uniforms, and some of the kids look like they walked straight out of Dangerous Minds with Michelle Pfeiffer.
They probably did in the same year.
It's a religious school, at least, because that's something that I had in my notes. But yeah, thinking of Dangerous Minds, because the way that this movie decides to add urban to its repertoire is by making sure that we get them playing basketball. That's as far as this movie goes into being urban.
The kids learn that they are being split up, and Eli doesn't take too kindly to this news. One of the boys says Eli can't sit there because he's scared that Eli would try sucking his dick, which causes a fight with more of the students. We get to Adam's favorite scene as we're in recess and Josh watches a street game of basketball, and he's joined by a girl who says that he needs to not start fights with T-Lock, and Josh responds he shouldn't start fights with Eli. The girl tells them to put Josh in. He says he has a little game, and we see him do the white man can't jump on the entire squad.
Yep, this movie, I mean, to call this movie a hodgepodge of disparate elements is an understatement, because this part has the schmaltz of a Disney Channel original movie. With, of course, the Amish kid knows is a better basketball player. Like, I'm pretty sure I've seen that movie at least two times. And also, the thing that makes me laugh is, I just can't get over, this movie has the grease problem of they all look like they're 25.
Yeah. You know what? I hate to do this. I'll be the movie's defender. I'll say this much. I like the way that Josh is integrating with the squad and Eli isn't. And Amanda is taking a liking to Josh because of the reasons of him integrating. And the only reason William likes Eli is because he sees money in his eyes when Eli produces his corn. So they are going for something here that I do like. And this basketball scene, as cheesy as it is showing that he is integrating pretty well.
Yep, because it's got the ignorant white kid has to come in and show all the urban kids how to play basketball.
Although you were right, he was a white man because, like you said, he was about 25. Yeah. So Eli sees that Josh is playing basketball and he's none too happy about it. He tells Josh that they need to promise to stay together no matter what, and then insists he doesn't play their games. We see Eli doing another sermon as a montage of all the sins is shown. Amanda sees Eli come back from the sermon and starts exploring. She walks in and is almost shocked as she sees corn that has been grown. She walks through it and grabs an ear of it, which magically grows back. And then we see a POV of He Who Walks Behind the Rose as Amanda runs into a homeless guy who walks right into the patch.
We also get that kiss of the ear. Like, I felt like I was watching one of the worst Freddy movies.
Oh, yes. In the series.
Yeah, it was like that scene with the telephone.
Yeah.
Yep, but just done poorly.
That was,
I'm not going to be as harsh on the effects in this movie as I was for the first one. Because I'll give it this, there's some actual creativity in this movie.
Oh yeah, the craftsmanship in this movie is very good. I will go that far. Not story-wise, I'm talking effects-wise. Like, there's some good stuff here.
I think there's some fun story stuff, too, as we keep going.
Alrighty. Amanda tells William to cut down the patch, as we see the homeless guy eating the corn and he gets his eyes penetrated, which is, again, like the book, the short story. You know, a character gets her eyes penetrated by the ears of corn, and we see that happen here.
To go with the Child's Play 2, that's like the guy at the factory line who gets his eyes replaced.
Yes, yes. We see William walk around the patch, and Eli gives him an ear to try. He tells William he developed a strain of corn along with his dad. William is amazed that he grew the patch in 4 weeks with no blemishes or bugs.
Do you say he's amazed?
Yes.
Maize, corn, maize.
Oh.
Yeah. You know what? Never mind. Mute.
As they walk by, we see the head of the homeless guy from earlier. Eli puts some kernels on the school cafeteria counter as they turn into bugs and crawl around. He then gets told that it wouldn't hurt him if he made a couple friends, as we're seeing people eat what turns out to be bugs and vomit. Which, boy, oh boy, this was disgusting. Holy shit. We see the principal have nightmares about murders as he opens the Bible and sees mud inside. He then gives a sermon as Eli tells him his sermon bores him. Eli gets up and gives his own sermon about Joshua, as well as his brothers who polluted the earth, and that no one should let that pollution happen. So he's getting people on his side here.
Yeah, but I'm questioning if it's through their own free will or if he's like possessing them when they hear his sermons. And also, this shit's giving me Poison Ivy vibes when he starts talking about pollution and all that nonsense.
Yeah, but you know what? I think it's when they eat his corn. When they eat the corn that he puts in the cafeteria is when they become magnetized like, to him.
Yeah, they're like, yeah. It's like mind control.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've seen this in at least half a dozen Power Rangers episodes, too.
Josh is hanging out with his friends and says that Eli is actually his adopted brother. Social Services calls about Eli and him being associated with Gatlin, as well as not having aged since 1964. But Amanda can't pick up the phone in time, and of course Eli is standing on the stairs when this missed call happens. We then see the social worker get stuck in tax dollars lights as Eli appears. She sits to call 911, but that doesn't work as her lighter lights her whole head on fire and Eli laughs. This was another fun death, man. I love this.
The kills in this movie. This movie, he is Pinhead from Hellraiser 3, where he's just following the Freddy Krueger template.
Mm-hmm.
I can appreciate that the people working on this, especially those behind the scenes, coming up with the death, the kills, the effects, are just like, what do I got to work with? What's the idea? You know what? I'm going to do with what I got. And they're making the most of the opportunities they have with some of the stuff. And I appreciate it for that, because it is the most ridiculously just corny type of deaths that I can actually have some fun with, though. I'm surprised that I'm just like laughing and enjoying myself in just a schlocky, corny way.
We cut to William showing off the corn Eli's growing as Amanda heads in to cut down the patch. William concludes that corn is a fortune and that he developed the strain. Amanda is having a hard time cutting the strain as she cuts herself. A vine takes her down and she's dragged away, the shears landing right next to her. Amanda is chased through the patch as she escapes, only to trip over a pipe and have the back of her head hit a divot in the pipe as she vomits blood, and this was a painful-looking death. Holy shit.
I have the feeling that Final Destination came out from this scene right here, because they Final Destination this woman.
Good call.
And this is when I'm also like, this cornfield, this corn patch, the size of it changes every time the camera changes angles. It's wide, it's thin, it's 5 rows, it's 5 acres. Like, it's amazing how this thing, for one little alleyway, courtyard here next to this factory, but it's just something about it that makes this appealing in that cheesy way. It's schlocky fun.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is very much in line with the second one, where it is following the trajectory of these horror franchises becoming much more comedic and kill-centric. But I gotta say, this movie's nowhere near as laborious as some of those lesser Friday the 13th movies. Like, I think this one moves at a good clip, and I'm invested is the wrong word, because it's hard to get emotionally embedded into something like this, but I didn't want to turn it off. I kind of wanted to see what happens next.
Put that on the poster. I didn't want to turn it off. We see a drawing of Amanda being blacked out. We then cut to her funeral as William is grieving. Eli sits next to him and hugs him as we cut to what happened to the doctor in the last film. So we are having some continuity here. The principal sees the book, which says that the harvest is upon us. He's walking through the halls with some bad stares headed his way. We get a big close-up of Eli as he's talking to the kids. Josh is hearing one of his new friends say that Eli makes sense with what he says. And Josh encourages her to not listen to what he says. He shows her the drawing that Eli made the day Amanda died, and he tells her that they've been through a lot together and that they make each other feel safe, as Josh then makes out with Maria. He gets taught the bases, and Josh asks how he gets a home run as Malcolm walks in. But I like this, because throughout this film, Josh has been defending his brother. He's like, look, he talks what he talks, but you know, I'm his brother. I'm going to stay with him no matter what. He's starting to separate himself from him. He's integrated. He's separating himself. He's not going to be the he who walks behind the rose worshiping monster that Eli becomes. So we have a little bit of character development here.
Well, yeah, Boob saved me, too. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it's not for all of us, but, you know, let's say, I don't know, 2 out of 3, it may go that route. Yeah, it's high school. It's the Amish guy who's learning to flirt and kiss a girl for the first time. But I do like that we're at least getting, you know, these brothers are separating for one reason or another. Could be because it feels like there's 20 years difference between their ages at that point. But yeah, at least it's an additional conflict that they're going their own route and going a different way. And you can kind of feel that Eli's starting to build his army somehow, and the brother's just not going to be alongside it.
Yeah, I like that there's believable dissonance happening. And the fact that I could give this movie any semblance of compliments as far as characterization is the biggest victory lap possible. So, good job.
Yeah, and again, we are seeing Eli's effect, too, because Maria does say, look, a lot of what your brother says makes sense. You know, so she's obviously had the corn.
Yeah, eat the corn is how you get a home run.
Yeah, right. Oh, Jesus. He tells Josh that he doesn't want his sister to get involved with a weird family like his, and this is Malcolm I'm talking about, and the fact school's out and the courts are empty means everyone is with Eli. We cut to Eli giving another sermon about he who walks behind the rose. He's interrupted as he stalks through the cornfields. The dead homeless man starts eating the kid's arm, and Eli says that he'll help him if the kids help him in return. Boy, oh boy, this was a freaky scene.
Yeah, so what is it that Eli is trying to do exactly? Spread the good word in his eyes?
Spread the good word and, you know, build this army. Build this army to, I'm guessing, take over everywhere is what I'm guessing.
Yeah, his, like, the end game isn't very clear, but it's amazing how much it feels like Hellraiser Hell on Earth in that regard. What does Pinhead want? I don't know. He arrives in this town. He's going to take over. What happens here? Eli arrives in this town. He's going to take over. It's kind of crazy when we think about the parallel paths those are taking.
The kids then whistle during the principal's sermon and then start maniacally laughing. The principal is learning that the school has shaped into something decent since Eli started going there.
I love how the superintendent or whatever is basically the mayor from Jaws, where he's like, hey, our PR is up. Crime has gone down. You yell corn, we got a panic on our hands in an open house. He's telling him just go with the flow. And this, the priest has been in so many movies. Like, he's in Ghostbusters.
Uh-huh.
He was in Titanic.
Yep.
And right sandwiched in between, Children of the Corn 3.
Yeah, he was the guy who had the Ghostbusters in his ballroom.
He's the hotel manager.
Yeah, hotel manager, yeah. Malcolm apologizes to Josh, and he asks him what happened to Eli's parents, as he's getting suspicious. Josh leaves the house as William walks in and asks him about the corn, which William says, damn skippy it is. Josh has flashbacks to what happened to his dad, and Eli tells him that no matter what happened to his dad, Eli is the only family he has. We get another flashback to the kids in masks killing adults and setting them on fire in the cornfields, which is what the principal is seeing, as well as Eli attacking him. We see a package show up for Amanda, which Josh signs for. Josh wakes up Malcolm and tells him that he needs to get dressed. He tells him about his history in Gatlin and his father committing corn experiments while there. Corn experiments, huh? Frank is visited by Eli as Josh tells Malcolm of what it was delivered to him, which consists of the harvest moon and its effect on the kids. They drive to see Nolan. Eli says both Frank and his foster mother knew what he was when they met him, and he doesn't understand why. He sends pews right into the father's legs as Josh and Malcolm show up, only to be shut out of the chapel as Frank falls from the cross Eli had him strung up on.
Oh yeah, this whole priest fight is right out of Hellraiser 3. Head goes into the church.
Yep, absolutely.
Maria goes to visit Josh as Eli shows up. We see Josh wake up, and I love this bromance between Josh and Malcolm. Like, these two have gotten quite the connection here. We see Eli tell Maria it's time for dinner as he brings out the fresh-looking corn. Josh and Malcolm visit the fields in Gatlin as Eli is giving Maria and her parents a nice corn dinner. The parents are consumed by bugs that eat through their bodies. Again, just crazy effects here by Screaming Mad George. We see Malcolm and Josh climb up the different scarecrows as crows show up. Josh finds the book as his dad morphs into a sort of monster. They're attacked as Josh cuts him off with the scythe. Malcolm goes back for the book and is attacked by the vines, and this is a very cool death as his head is literally lifted off his body, Thing style. This was awesome. I'm sorry. I'm with this.
Oh, the practical effects in this are surprisingly good for something that's direct-to-video.
It's amazing that I'm enjoying how ridiculous this is, right? Like, I appreciate this type of 90s schlockiness, and I don't say that in a demeaning way. It's just, it is what it is. So maybe it's just the right mood, but I'm like, man, this is fun to see. These deaths are silly, to your point. They're, you know, inventive, the creature designs. The only one, and it should take me out, but I laugh, is when there's obvious cuts to what is literally like an action figure.
Yes.
It's just like, wow, okay. That's pretty bad. But, I mean, maybe it's just because it's practical. It's not the thing, but just, I love something about seeing some practical. So this shit is absolutely silly. And then when you know where to look in these group of kids, you know who you see, ladies and gentlemen?
Oh, yeah, we'll get there. We're getting there.
Hold on. All right.
Oscar Isaac, yep.
You know what I love about this is, like, the way the head is lifted off the body, you're just like, oh, God, that wouldn't happen. But you're so with the effect here, you really don't think about that. It's like, wow, look how cool that looks, you know? And, of course, that's the feeling you get when you watch The Thing as well.
It's the only time you'll hear The Thing compared to Children of the Corn. Part three.
Three. Children of the Corn. Urban
Harvest. Yeah. Urban Harvest, yeah. Josh grabs the book and then takes off. And then we're hearing Eli's sermon the night of the harvest moon as Josh is now 70 miles from Chicago. And boy, he gets that 70 miles pretty quickly.
Yeah, these two, he had a case of the lead foot, apparently.
Yeah.
Either that or Dominic Toretto picked them up. Because remember, this movie is about family, technically.
The ceremony is taking place as William comes home drunk. And as the sermon is going on, we see a close-up, not even like a long shot, a close-up of one who, Adam?
Charlize motherfreaking Theron.
Did you know she was in this when you started watching this?
Forehand, no. And as I'm watching, I'm like, why does that look? Now, remember, I knew her first from 2 Days in the Valley, so I know young Charlize.
Yeah.
And this was only like 2 years before that, which is mind-boggling that you go from this to that. But I'm like, is that it? It made me pause the movie, bring up IMDb, and I didn't think that it would actually show on there, but I was curious, and yep. That is Charlize, Oscar-winning actress Charlize Theron in, I mean, that's got to trump Jennifer Aniston's Leprechaun, you know, joining up here. So that's just, that boggles my mind. Good for her.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, this isn't a long shot. Like this, she gets a close-up and she's got one other scene too. Yep. It's crazy to see her. And we're going to see another one next week that really boggled my mind. Yeah, but yeah,
at least she's the lead.
Yeah, she's the lead, of course.
I knew this through osmosis, but my point of reference is Devil's Advocate, which was a couple years after this.
Yep, Devil's Advocate, and 2 Days in the Valley was 1 year after this. So I remember I had that poster. The video store I was working for gave me that poster. Took full advantage of that.
Yeah, they really tried to sell you on that movie.
Yeah. This is also the second future star that we see, because I didn't even mention during the basketball scene. Matt, do you know who we see?
When they're playing early on?
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's Xander from Buffy.
Yep, Nicholas Brendon. He's in that scene. Kind of funny that we see these future stars here. And by the way, this was Charlize Theron's first movie. This is her first movie as an extra. So maybe we'll get to Critters and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well, that's Critters 3, so it's very apropos.
Yeah.
The third installment's where you get, because look, Halloween had the first one. Friday the 13th had the first one. Nightmare on Elm Street had the first one where big names got their feet wet there. This one... And Critters, they waited for the third movie.
William shows up to the sermon, and Eli tells him it's time to rest as he sends a scythe right through him. He then says, let the harvest begin. Josh is next to show up. He tells him that he's like a worm. If he kills one half, he can kill the other. The battle begins with scythe-infused fire. Josh throws him the book and then pierces them both with a sickle, and they both explode.
This is literally the ending of the Brendan Fraser Mummy. They have a fight over the book.
The kids all wake up, along with Maria. Someone is pulled underground by who walks behind the rose, and we see that oh-so-familiar shot of it roaming underground, because we got to see this every time. And then it springs to life in a very Screaming Mad George-style creature. This creature looks like something from Big Trouble in Little China, which, by the way, Screaming Mad George also worked on. But it's almost like the alien queen of the corn, this fucking thing. It's just so bizarre looking.
I should hate it, but it is keeping in tone to this film, so it's just something to almost to just revel in, like, good, go for it. Go as crazy as you could frickin' go, and good for you for having the stones to try this out. Does it work? No, it looks hokey as hell, but it is fitting here, and it's fun.
I mean, this is better than almost all those Tremors sequels. Doing better than that. It's bad enough you literally call them a worm, and then you have to have them fight an actual worm as the final boss. Like a little bit of self-actualization.
And I love this look. It's got like the crooked eyes and very slimy appearance from Big Trouble in Little China. It's that same style look. Someone's taken out by a window as others are taken into this weird quicksand-like substance. Maria is picked up as Josh cuts himself free. And I love this implication that she was swallowed, that she's moving through its body, and we hear her screams hampered by gurgling, just as there's a close-up of the creature's neck. This is fun stuff, man.
And that's when I think of some of the Nightmare on Elm Street later, yes. Kind of like 4, 5, 6, 7, when you get into those kind of episodes, and yeah, it's just, wow.
Yeah, this is not on my bingo card as far as how I thought this movie would end.
And you know what? Again, it doesn't look great at all. In fact, it doesn't even look very good, but just the spirit of it is what keeps me involved, and just seeing the way it's going here. I'm having a lot of fun with this, actually. More people are killed as Josh slices away at its stem and pulls Maria out. He cuts more of the root as they run away, and the creature falls and eventually dissolves. Maria tells Josh that she's okay as they walk away. We then cut to Germany. As a shipment arrives, the box is open, and wouldn't you know it, here's a bunch of corn. We see a deal made for it to be shipped all over the world. As we get a close-up of the corn, chanting happens, and credits roll on Children of the Corn 3, Urban Harvest. So it's going to continue in Germany next film, right, guys?
I was also going to say, really, of course, you're doing a movie about the indoctrination of brainwashing of children using religious archetypes to a degree. Of course it's in Germany.
All right, Adam, what'd you feel about this ending? This little cliffhanger.
You know what? At least you set it up some way for the future. It was keeping in with this. So, of course, that's what's going to happen. You're going to get some crazy horn, freaking, I don't know, some... yeah, lost my train of thought, but some bloodlines coming with corn in Germany, and it makes sense.
All right, boys, scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Children of the Corn 3 Urban Harvest? Adam?
Children of the Corn 3 Urban Harvest is not a good movie. I'm putting it out here. It's not a good movie. However, it's a movie you could have a good time with. This thing is cheesy, it's silly, it's corny. The acting's not, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it belongs kind of like we've talked about before, kind of a late night Freddy's Nightmares and Tales from the Dark Side type of story, and it revels in it. The effects are cheap and they're fun in that way. The acting between Joshua and Eli, I think they're a step up a little bit. The adults are, well, everybody in this film is an adult. This is a film, I hate saying turn off your brain because you're going to do that with all the Children of the Corn, but if you're just in the mood for something just stupid, cheesy, schlocky, you can do a lot worse. This film in the first 5-10 minutes tells you what it is, and it doesn't deviate. It just keeps ramping it up. And by the end of this film, when you get the most crazy type of monsters and a cut to a like a puppeted doll being shoved into its mouth, you're either checked out well before then or you're along for the ride. And I was along for the ride, and I could not believe it based on me just despising last week's film. I had fun with this. I did, and I didn't expect it. It's not good, but it's fun. And on the Children of the Corn scale, I'm going to rate this a 5. I think you can enjoy this, pop it on, and just like it for what it is. And I don't think we're going to have that a lot in the series, but I did with this one. So 5 on 10, 5 urban ears of corn for Children of the Corn 3.
Wow. 5 on 10, was not expecting that in this retrospective. Got to say, when you see that's a compliment, that's saying something. Matt?
Well, I'm going to continue the surprises. This might be the first horror franchise I could think of where I hate the first one, and then I have a good time with 2 and 3 to the point where they pistol whip the shit out of the original. Normally, it's the other way around. Not here, but I guess we're in the wacky world of Stephen King, so all bets are off. I don't think I like it as much as the second one, because there's a little bit in the middle when everyone's being converted that it kind of lulls, but every time they cut to the absurd deaths or just the fact that this, like, much like Chucky, you have this kid that someone could just drop kick and he'd be disposed of. That kind of makes it ridiculous, but if I was watching this on the Sci-Fi Channel on a Friday night when I had nothing better to do, and the fact that I watched a Barbie doll get swallowed by a giant corn creature, you could do worse. And like I said, the biggest surprise was I thought the gore was and the death sequences were actually pretty well constructed. Certainly not scary, but I don't think it's trying to be, and I am perfectly okay with that. So I'm going to echo Adam's score and give this a 5 as well on the corn scale.
You know, we ended our last retrospective on a movie that praised itself as being a practical effects-laden film. The producers, the director, they all came out with Alien Romulus and said, this is almost all practical. We take pride in that. And there's something to be said about a film that takes practical effects to the levels that they try to. And this movie goes hard. It goes hard with the practical effects, and God, are they fun. All of them are the types of horror effects that I grew up loving, and they're here full scale. And you know what? It goes harder than it should have. You know, you could say, well, they should have seen their budget and not gone for that creature at the end because it doesn't look very good. No, it doesn't look very good. In fact, this movie is not very good on that scale. But on a practical effects scale, it is fun as hell. And I liked what it built to. We started small, and we got bigger and bigger until, man, we had a hell of a finale. Now, that's not to say that, you know, I'm not praising this as much as, say, Raiders of the Lost Ark. This is not a movie to put on that scale, and we will say it every single podcast. You got to do a different scale when you do these movies. When you do these Night Shift movies, you're on a whole other world as far as film quality goes. No, there's not a lot of great filmmaking here. No, there's not a lot of great performances here, but there's a hell of a lot of fun to be had here. I will even go as far as to go one up on my colleagues. I will give this a 6 on that scale. I think this is a fun ride, and you know what? For the first 3 movies, I've at least had a decent time with all of them. You know, unlike my colleagues who one didn't like the second one didn't like the first, I had a pretty decent time with this one. So, yeah, 6 out of 10 for me on Children of the Corn 3. Now, you know who liked this movie a lot is Stephen King himself. He was hanging out with Mick Garris one day, and Mick Garris tells this story on his podcast. And Mick Garris asked him, hey, have you seen any of these Children of the Corn movies? And King's like, no, I try to stay away from them. And Garris goes, watch this. He puts on this movie, and King came on, he went out on Twitter and said, I had a hell of a fun time with this one. You know, he had fully endorsed this. So Stephen King is a fan of Children of the Corn 3, Urban Harvest. Yeah, does that surprise you?
Yeah, because he hated Kubrick's The Shining initially, but he liked Children of the Corn 3.
Stephen King is the James Cameron of random likes and dislikes with films, so not completely surprised. Ask Stanley Kubrick how he feels about what Stephen King likes and doesn't like. So, you know what? I'm not surprised, because he does sometimes just go, you know what? Almost like we did with this one. There's times where King goes, yeah, fuck it. That was fun. And I admire him for that.
All right. So next week, we get to Children of the Corn 4, The Gathering. Matt, what are you expecting when we talk about that particular film? Do you think you'll have as much fun as you did this week?
I hope so, but I also know there's going to be a downturn in this franchise. It's kind of inevitable. I'm just hoping it's not the next one, because Naomi Watts deserves better, but she's also in Children of the Corn 4. And unlike this one, I don't know any of the talent behind it. I don't know the director, Greg Spence, and I've heard this one doesn't have the best of reputations.
No, it certainly does not. And I think there is a start of a downturn. And does it start with this one? I don't really remember. I guess we'll get to that when we get to next week's film.
You know, I'm kind of excited just because I didn't think I'd enjoy this one. So I didn't know who was in. I didn't know how many of these existed. But Naomi Watts has at least me a little peckish and ready to watch this film. But it looks like, at least based on the poster, I'm not watching anything else. Looks like we're going back to the farm. So I'm interested to see, after this one being cheesy, if they, I can't believe I say this, if they're going to try to ground this film back in what it originally was.
All right, until next week, or later on this week, whenever this podcast lands, when we talk about Children of the Corn 4, The Gathering, What Hath the Lord Podcast. Thank you, boys.
We must sacrifice them both tonight.
Amos will satisfy him. We need the woman. She'll bring the man to us.
No, he must be taken without her. We cannot remove her from this place. It is holy.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Why don't you put that in your gob and smoke it?
come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Question not my judgment, Malachi. I am the giver of his word.
And keep coming back as the boys will continue going through the works of Stephen King in publication order.
Want you too, Malachi.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice. It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
You guys all belong in an asylum somewhere, loony bin. Where are your parents?
And if you like this review, please head over to percolatedmedia.net or search your podcast streamer of choice, for we have individual reviews such as Knock at the Cabin, The Black Phone, Megan, as well as additional blockbuster franchises like the Mad Max movies, Avatar, the Planet of the Apes franchise, Pirates of the Caribbean, Indiana Jones, movies featuring the team-up of Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese, Jurassic Park, and so many more.
You are a sinner. You are the fire of the corn. It will do you no good to curse me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
You know not the laws. He speaks them only to me.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Assuming that it's ever stopped.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
You know, if you're gonna keep visiting Isaac, it's probably something you should know. It's a small town. People are gonna talk.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
But you've come back to us.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
It'll make us just like them.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is a Percolated Media production. All rights reserved, and no copyright infringement is intended.
There ain't nothing out there, Mordecai, except a lot of corn. Stupid old corn.
See you around.
We see William try to get Josh to wear some new clothes as what's her name? As Amanda is hearing whispers of, and Eli then leaves the classroom. All right, we get to Adam's favorite. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
We get to Adam's favorite scene as pews right into the father's legs as Josh and Malcolm show up, only to be shut out of the chapel as Frank falls from the cross Eli had him strung up on.
Oh, yeah. This whole priest fight is right out of Hellraiser 3 when Head goes into the church.
Yep, absolutely.
Adam, remember the shot from the Hellraiser trailer where he had his arms up and then like all the glass is sprayed out all around him? That's what I thought of here.
The big trailer shot, yep.
Yeah, it's the best part of the movie. Outside of that, Hellraiser 3 is pretty dull.
The CD battle was amazing.
Oh, yeah, the best part is the CD player, Cenobite. There's like a blender Cenobite.
Yes,
yeah. Cameraman Cenobite.
Yeah, when he's in that freaking pillar, the movie's just such a bore.
Oh, we got to get to that series eventually.
Oh, God.
Adam, what are you expecting next week when we talk Children of the Corn 4, The Gathering?
Hang on. Go to Matt. I got to get the door.
Okay. Now, Matt, you know who did like this movie?